We're the artists as well as the art. As far-fetched as this idea may sound to some people, it's precisely the crux of some of the greatest controversy among some of the greatest minds in recent history. In a quote from his autobiographical notes, for example, Albert Einstein shared his belief that we're essentially passive observers, living in a universe that's already in place and one in which we seem to have very little influence over our world. We live in a world, he said, which exists independently of us human beings and which stands before us like a great, eternal riddle, at least partially accessible to our inspection and thinking. In contrast to Einstein's perspective, which is still widely held by many scientists today, Professor John Wheeler, Princeton University physicist and a colleague of Einstein's, offers a radically different view of our role in creation. In terms that are bold, clear, and graphic, Wheeler says, quote, "We had this old idea that there's a universe out there, and here is man, the observer, safely protected from the universe by a 6-inch slab of plate glass," end of quote. Referring to late 20th century experiments that show us how simply looking at something changes that something. Wheeler continues, "Now we learn from the quantum world that to even observe so minuscule an object as an electron, we have to shatter the plate glass. We have to reach in there. So the old word observer simply has to be crossed off the books, and we must put in the new word participator." What a shift and a radically different interpretation of our relationship to the world around us. Wheeler is stating it's impossible for us to simply watch the world happen around us. Experiments in quantum physics do show, in fact, that the act of us simply looking at something as tiny as an electron, just focusing our awareness upon what that electron is doing for even an instant in time, changes the properties of that electron while we're looking. The experiment suggests that the very act of observation is an act of creation unto itself, and that consciousness is doing the creating. These findings seem to support Wheeler's proposition that we can no longer think of ourselves merely as onlookers who have no effect on the world that we're observing. Well, to think of us participating in creation, rather than simply passing through the universe during the brief period of a lifetime, requires a new view of what the universe is and how it works. Groundwork for precisely such a view was a basis of a series of books and papers by another Princeton physicist and a colleague of Einstein. His name was David Bohm. Before his death in 1992, Bohm left us two pioneering theories that offer a very different, and in some ways a nearly holistic view of our role in the universe. Though the words of the theories themselves may sound technical, when we really understand what the words are saying, the principles are actually very, very simple. The first of Bohm's theories was an interpretation of quantum physics that set the stage for his meeting and his subsequent friendship with Albert Einstein. It was the theory of Bohm's paper that opened the door to what he called the creative operation of underlying levels of reality. In other words, Bohm believed that there are deeper or maybe higher levels of creation that hold the blueprint for what happens here in our world. And it's in these subtle levels of reality that he believed our physical world actually begins. Well, the second theory was an explanation of the universe as a single, unified system of nature with everything connected in ways that maybe aren't always so obvious. In this paradigm-shifting work, Bohm believed that if we could see the universe in its entirety from a greater vantage point of somewhere other than this Earth, that the things in our world, in fact, appear as what he called a projection of the things that are really happening in another realm, one that we simply can't see. He viewed both the seen as well as the unseen worlds as expressions of this greater, more universal order, and to distinguish between these two realms, he called them the implicate and the explicate order. The things that we can see and touch and that appear separate in our world, like rocks, oceans, forests, animals, and people, these are examples of his explicate order of creation. As separate as they may appear from one another, however, Bohm suggested that they're actually linked in the deeper reality in ways that we simply can't see from our place in creation. Bohm saw all of the things that look separate to us as part of a greater wholeness, and he called that wholeness the implicate order. So to describe the difference between Bohm's implicate and explicate order, he gave the analogy of a flowing stream of water. Using the different ways that we can see water flowing in the stream as a metaphor, he described the illusion of separateness, Quote, on this stream, we may see an ever-changing pattern of vortices and ripples and waves and splashes, which evidently have no independent existence. End of quote. In other words, although the water's disturbances may look separate to us, Bohm viewed them as intimately linked and deeply, deeply connected to one another. They're all part of the same water. Well, Bohm used examples such as this to describe his sense that our universe and everything in it, including us, may in fact be part of a grand cosmic pattern where everything is evenly shared by all other portions. When he summarized this unified view of nature, he simply stated, quote, we must learn to view everything as part of an undivided wholeness in flowing movement. Well, it was in the 1970s that Bohm offered an even clearer metaphor to describe how the universe may be thought of as a distributed yet undivided whole. Reflecting on the interrelated nature of creation, he became more convinced than ever that the universe works like a great cosmic hologram. And in the hologram, every fragment of a something contains the entire something, only on a smaller scale. It's a very, very simple idea. So from Bohm's perspective, what we see as our world in totality is actually the holographic projection of something even more real that's happening at a deeper level of creation. And it's this deeper level, this implicate level, is where all things begin. Well, the simplicity of the human body offers a beautiful example of just how a hologram works, and one that's already familiar to us. Because the DNA from anywhere in our body will contain all of our genetic code, the entire pattern of our DNA for the rest of the body, no matter where that DNA comes from. So whether we sample our hair or finger or blood or the genetic pattern for the rest of our body, it's always in the same code. It's always the same. So just as the universe is constantly changing from the implicate to the explicate, the flow of the unseen to the seen is what makes this flow of creation work. It's this constantly changing nature that John Wheeler had in mind when he described the universe as a participatory universe, one that's unfinished, constantly is responding to changes in consciousness. Well, interestingly, this is precisely the way that the ancient traditions of the past suggested our world works. From the Indian Vedas, believed by some scholars to date to 5,000 years BC, to the 2,000-year-old Dead Sea Scrolls, a general theme seems to suggest that the world is actually the mirror of things that are happening in a higher realm, in a deeper reality, a place that we simply cannot see from where we are in our world. Commenting on the new translations of the Dead Sea Scroll fragments, for example, known as the Songs of the Sabbath Sacrifice, the translators summarize the content by saying precisely this. The scroll actually says, what happens on earth is but a pale reflection of that greater ultimate reality. So the implication of both the ancient texts and quantum theory, they're the same. It's that the unseen world is the place where we create the blueprint for our relationships, our careers, our success, the failures of the visible world. From this perspective, the divine matrix works like this great cosmic screen that allows us to see the energy of our emotions and our beliefs, all of our anger, hate, and rage, as well as our love, compassion, and understanding. All of that energy is projected in the physical medium that we call life. And just as a movie screen reflects the image of whatever or whoever has been filmed, without judgment, the divine matrix appears to do precisely the same thing. It provides this neutral surface for our inner experiences and our beliefs to be seen in the outer world.